Psalm 33, Section 3. In verse 5 now it reads, He, meaning God, He loveth righteousness and judgment. The earth is full of the goodness of the Lord. So let us expand our discussion now into the topic of judgment. The mere mention of God's judgment, I know, is going to turn a lot of people off. In times of crisis or catastrophe such as this, there's a pervasive notion that God is actively judging. The notion is even stirred on and inflamed by many a preacher and evangelist. If, as the psalmist contends, the Lord loveth righteousness, verse 5, if the earth is filled with his goodness, verse 5, how then can he unrighteously judge, verse 5, and also still fill the earth with goodness? If, in fact, crisis or catastrophe is a vehicle of God's judgment, if, what or who is it that he is judging? Is it the person that dies from a coronavirus? Most people think of God's judgment in this way. Or is it the judgment on the people and the systems that were called upon by God to protect that victim? Psalms 33, verse 10 and 11 now read, The Lord bringeth the counsel of the heathen to naught. He maketh the devices of the people of none effect. The counsel of the Lord standeth forever. The thoughts of his heart are to all generations. So, who or what does the psalmist say God is judging? If anything, it's the counsel of the heathen, according to the psalmist, because he's bringing it to naught. Why? Because all things, whether in heaven or earth, must be judged by one certain eternal standard in order to be fair and impartial. The standard must be God's counsel, which standeth forever alone. The test is not so much for him to know for certain that it is in compliance. Rather, it is for us to see for certain that no, it is not. Let every man and woman in their own heart in this sudden matter examine the evidences stirred up and so judge. Think of it this way. Crises and catastrophes are built into the sandbox here. They are guaranteed to happen almost randomly and mostly indiscriminately. They are like the stirring of the pot so that it never fully settles. Knowing that these events are going to happen, certain people and organizations and governments are called to act on the people's behalf to prepare and protect against these occurrences, then to respond and recover. There is no greater failure than for these people and these systems to fail protecting the lives of those citizens they were called out by God to protect. There too, the citizens themselves are under examination. What, if anything, have they done for themselves? Have they wisely saved and prepared and put into their storehouses? Or have they frivolously squandered their wealth in times of plenty? Have they developed and hedged and watched over their smaller communities and economies? Have they distributed to their poor and properly sheltered their homeless and their orphaned? All of this action beforehand, or have they selfishly focused the years of plenty on their own greed, their own covetousness, their own drunkenness and revelry? How have they reacted to this now that all this has happened? Have they subjected themselves to the higher powers who are ordained by God, Romans 13, 1 through 6? Have they spoken evil of their dignitaries? Have they lined their own and their corporations' pockets at the afflicted's expense? These are but a few of the things that can be judged. And the judgment doesn't have to be God's judgment alone. We can observe these very same things side by side with the counsel of God and judge these matters for ourselves. You have observed these things just as much as I have. You tell me, were we ready? Were we in line with the counsel of God even slightly beforehand? And now that this event is happening, how are we doing now? How are we holding up? Have we responded appropriately? Hopefully soon it'll all run its course and we'll be looking back on it with much more solid and tangible facts and figures. Did we do this right, looking back on it? You know? Did we minimize the damage to our homes and to our communities and to our society? Are we now restoring our communities more in line with the counsel of God? Did we rightly assess what we can now be doing to next time do this better? Did we know better how to prepare for the next unknown event? And can we keep ourselves to that so as not to make the same mistakes? If there's any judgment to be found in this, this is where the focus of God's judgment most likely or most righteously is. It's where it's placed. Is God wrong for judging these people and the organizations on this basis? Certainly not. Is God wrong for judging the citizens and the common people on these bases? Surely not. Would it not be righteous for us to judge ourselves by the same self-examination? I can tell you with almost all certainty to the answers to every one of these questions, past, present, and future. The answer is no. No, we didn't. No, we are not. No, we will not. Why is this? Because our continuing reliance on the counsel of men, every historical proof helps support this conclusion. Okay, so the next question is, what about those that will die because of this virus? Is God wrong for allowing innocent people to die to make his point? It depends on how you view death. Is death their unfortunate punishment? Or is death their sweet reward? This is where our consideration gets more complicated. In one sense, these people are dead because of us. I guess we could consider it God's mercy that many more people than this didn't die because of our constant selfish excess. Cain's flippant response, what, am I my brother's keeper? Didn't work for him, and it won't work for us. In another real sense, we have to ask, where were the upright Christians in all of this? Does not judgment begin with the house of God? The psalmist writes here, verse 18 through 21, behold, the eye of the Lord is upon them that fear him, upon them that hope in his mercy, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Our soul waiteth for the Lord. He is our help and our shield. For our heart shall rejoice in him because we have trusted in his holy name. If there is any discomfort in the loss of these innocent lives, it is likely centered on the whereabouts of their souls. Is it not? There are two sides to this tricky coin. Yes, the individual is responsible to God at all times to have his or her business in order before meeting their maker above. And yes, the Christian, now saved by God's grace, offered through the atoning blood of Jesus Christ, is responsible for convincingly modeling the redeemed and regenerated life and to convey the sincerest and most uncontaminated public rendition of the message of the gospel of Christ. Failure on either party's part is a most sad affair. It is troubling because both of us think that we have plenty of time before either of our roles in salvation need be met. It is troubling because we both get too distracted by the normal daily affairs of this life, by our own wants and needs, by our own dreams and ambitions, that when it's all said and done, prove to be nothing more than a puff of smoke. Such is both of our vanities. To have this end this way, unexpected, yes, but not really, final and ultimate, yes, just like that, in the flash of a moment. This too is a judgment by the simple stirring of the pot, a judgment upon you and upon me and upon society at large that influences us away from the counsel of God that stands forever. This is a judgment, knowing God's final judgment that you and I considered and made for ourselves. The counsel of God was set forth all along and we both knew it. Why then did we both choose to do the opposite? And now, indiscriminately, without respect for any person saved or unsaved, the lots are cast and set into motion. Either you or I or someone else is removed from our wounded body and taken to the greater beyond. We should both pray, sir, for each other. For now, however, there is the counsel of the heathen, should we choose to continue with it, or there is the voice of hope, if we so dare. Beware. Hope, as I previously said, births action, and with action, responsibility.